Here we are, Christmas 2018. This show was started just before Christmas 2016. I cannot believe 2 years have elapsed so fast. On that first show, I bounced around quite a bit, from family Christmas insanity to a list of the worst Christmas songs ever recorded to my own version of Charlie Brown's assisted suicide. Is Christmas for kids? Well, it's for everybody, but especially kids, I think. And so last Christmas I did an all-family show. I put on my Santa suit, gathered everyone around the fire and read The Night Before Christmas and a very old Christmas story called The Little Match Girl. And I have a story for you tonight that was written a long time ago by a guy who called himself O. Henry. I'd read a few things he'd written over the years, but never bothered to learn anything about him. And it turns out the guy was an amazing character himself, a criminal and a jailbreaker. His real name was William Porter, and he was a bank teller in Texas, and they caught him embezzling. They arrested him, and he made bail, and he promptly jumped bail and fled to Honduras, where there was no extradition. He hid out there for about 6 months and wrote a book called Cabbages and Kings, and it is in that book where the phrase Banana Republic first appeared. So we have O. Henry to thank for that. Does anyone use that phrase anymore? Probably not. Too offensive. Porter's wife was supposed to move to Honduras with him, but her tuberculosis worsened, and when he learned she was near death, he returned to Texas to bury her and begin a jail sentence. They gave him a 5-year pull in some Ohio hellhole for embezzling a total of $854.06. That would be considered petty larceny in California today, just a misdemeanor. After 3 years, they let him off for good behavior, and he headed for New York, where he wrote a bunch more stories, including his most famous one, which I'll begin in a few moments. Porter was a hard drinker and had fried his liver and was dead by 48. He had a pretty wild life, yet he found most of his inspiration for stories while loitering in hotel lobbies, where he would observe and eavesdrop and sometimes converse with anybody. The story is called The Gift of the Magi, and a listener suggested I regale you with it. Sorry, I can't recall which listener that was, but if you're out there now, thank you. The story is famed for its ironic twist ending, but I think it might also be an allegory for the folly of gift-giving. Maybe O. Henry saw our consumerist future 100 years ago, and this is a cautionary tale. $1.87. That was all. She had put it aside, 1 cent, and then another, and then another, in her careful buying of meat and other food. Della counted it 3 times. $1.87. And the next day would be Christmas. There was nothing to do but fall on the bed and cry. So Della did it. The furnished room she was in cost $8 a week. In the hall below was a letterbox, too small to hold a letter. There was an electric bell, but it was broken, and there was a name beside the door, Mr. James Dillingham Young. When the name was placed there, Mr. James Dillingham Young was being paid $30 a week. Now, when he was being paid only $20 a week, the name seemed too long and important. It should perhaps have been Mr. James D. Young. But when Mr. James Dillingham Young entered the furnished rooms, his name became very short indeed. Mrs. James Dillingham Young put her arms warmly about him and called him Jim. Della finished her crying and cleared the marks of it from her face. She stood by the window and looked out. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 with which to buy Jim a gift. She'd put aside as much as she could for months with this result. $20 a week is not much. Everything had cost more than she expected. It always happened like that. Only $1.87 to buy a gift for Jim, her Jim. She'd spend many happy hours planning something nice for him, something nearly good enough, something almost worth the honor of belonging to Jim. There was a mirror between the windows of the room. It was very narrow. A person could only see a little of himself at a time. However, if he was very thin and moved very quickly, he might be able to get a good view of himself. Della, being quite thin, had mastered this art. Suddenly she turned from the window and stood before the mirror. Her eyes were shining brightly, but her face had lost its color. Quickly, she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its complete length. The James Dillingham Youngs were very proud of two things which they owned. One thing was Jim's gold watch. It had once belonged to his father, and long ago it had belonged to his father's father. The other source of pride was Della's hair. If a queen had lived in the rooms near theirs, Della would have washed and dried her hair where the queen could see it. Della knew her hair was more beautiful than any queen's jewels and gifts. If a king had lived in the same house with all his riches, Jim would have looked at his watch every time they met. Jim knew that no king had anything so valuable. So now, Della's beautiful hair fell around her, shining like a falling stream of brown water. It reached below her knee. It almost made itself into a dress for her. Then she put it up on her head again, nervously and quickly. Once she stopped for a moment and stood still, while a tear or two ran down her face. She put on her old brown coat. She put on her old brown hat. With the bright light still in her eyes, she moved quickly out the door and down the street. Where she stopped, the sign said, Mrs. Sofrani, Hair Articles of All Kinds. Up to the second floor, Della ran and stopped to get her breath. Mrs. Sofrani, large, too white and cold-eyed, looked at her.
Will you buy my hair? Asked Della.
I buy hair, said Mrs. Sofrani. Take off your hat and let me look at it.
Down fell the brown waterfall.
$20,
said Mrs. Sofrani, lifting the hair to feel its weight.
Give it to me quick, said Della.
Oh, and the next 2 hours seemed to fly by. She was going from one shop to another to find a gift for Jim. And she found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any of the shops, and she had looked in every shop in the city. It was a gold watch chain, very simply made. Its value was in its rich and pure material. Because it was so plain and simple, you knew that it was very valuable. All good things are like this. It was good enough for the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that Jim must have it. It was like him, quietness and value. Jim and the chain both had quietness and value. She paid $21 for it, and she hurried home with the chain and 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim could look at his watch and learn the time anywhere he might be. Though the watch was so fine, it had never had a fine chain. He sometimes took it out and looked at it only
when no one could see him do it. When Della arrived home, her mind quieted a little. She began to think more reasonably. She started to try to cover the sad marks of what she had done. Love and large-hearted giving, when added together, can leave deep marks. It's never easy to cover these marks. Never easy. Within 40 minutes, her head looked a little better. With her short hair, she looked like a schoolboy. She stood at the narrow mirror for a long time. "If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he looks at me a second time, he'll say I look like a girl who sings and dances for money. But what could I do, oh, what could I do with $1.87? By 7 o'clock, Jim's dinner was ready for him. Jim was never late. Della held the watch chain in her hand and sat near the door where he always entered. Then she heard his step in the hall, and her face lost color for a moment. She often said little prayers quietly about simple, everyday things, and now she said, "Please God, make him think I'm still pretty." The door opened and Jim stepped in. He looked thin, and he was not smiling. Poor guy. He was only 22 and with a family to take care of. He needed a new coat, and he had nothing to cover his cold hands. Jim stepped inside the door. He was as quiet as a hunting dog when it's near a bird. His eyes looked strangely at Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not understand. It filled her with fear. It was not anger nor surprise nor anything she had been ready for. He simply looked at her with that strange expression on his face. Della went to him. "Jim, dear," she said, "don't look at me like that. I had my hair cut off and sold it. I couldn't live through Christmas without giving you a gift. My hair will grow again. You won't care, will you? My hair grows really fast. It's Christmas, Jim. Let's be happy. You don't know what a beautiful, nice gift I got for you."
"You've cut off your hair?" asked Jim. He seemed to labor to understand what had happened. He seemed not to understand.
"Yes, I cut it off and sold it," said Della. "Don't you like me now? I'm me, Jim. I'm the same without my hair."
Jim looked around the room. "Your hair is gone," he said.
"Well, you don't have to look for it," said Della. "It's sold and gone. It's the night before Christmas, boy. Be good to me, because I sold it for you. Maybe the hairs of my head could be counted, but no one could ever count my love for you. Should we eat dinner, Jim?"
Jim put his arms around her. From inside his coat, he took something tied in wrapping paper. He put it on the table.
"I want you to understand me, Del," he said. "Nothing like a haircut could make me love you any less. But if you'll open that, you may know what I felt when I came in." She pulled off the paper and gave a cry of joy, and then it changed to tears. For there lay the combs that Della had seen in a shop window and loved for a long time, beautiful, beautiful combs with jewels, perfect for her beautiful hair. She had known they cost too much for her to buy them. She had looked at them without the least hope of owning them. And now they were hers, but her hair was gone. But she held them to her heart and at last was able to look up and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." And then she jumped up and cried. Oh, Jim had not seen his beautiful gift. She held it out to him in her open hand. The gold seemed to shine softly, as if with her own warm and loving spirit.
Isn't it perfect, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at your watch 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how they look together.
Jim sat down and smiled. Della, said he. I sold the watch to get the money to buy the combs. Why don't we have our dinner? Quite a story, isn't it? Christmas should always be steeped in tradition, right? And this being our third Christmas together, I've got one to keep. It was another story written many years ago by a high school dropout who went on to become a very famous author. His name was Jim Bishop, and he had perhaps the most clear vision of Christmas anyone has ever articulated. This is what Jim wrote. He was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasantine who knew not man. He grew up in another obscure village where he worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. Then for 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never married or owned a home. He never held a job, yet paid taxes. He never set foot inside a metropolis. He never traveled 200 miles from the place he was born. He never wrote a book or held an office. He did none of the things that usually accompany greatness. He received no awards, no medals, no prizes from his peers. While he was still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends deserted him. He was turned over to his enemies and went through the mockery of a trial. He had no lawyers, no friendly juries, no fair hearing. He was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only piece of property he had, his cloak. After he died, he was taken down and laid in a borrowed grave. Those who stood watch could not explain his disappearance. And yet, 2,000 years have come and gone, and today, he is still the central figure for much of the human race. All the armies that ever marched, and all the navies that ever sailed, and all the parliaments that ever sat, and all the kings that ever reigned put together have not affected the life of man upon this earth as powerfully as this one solitary life. Thanks for spending this time with me. Stop by thatlarryshow.com. Merry Christmas and God bless us, everyone.